Welcome to Write Your Story with your host, Angela Robertson.
Kia ora, and welcome to our Write Your Story program. I'm Angela Robertson, a local writer, speaker, and facilitator of the popular Write Your Story series of community workshops. I'm delighted to be facilitating this program with Coast Access Radio, where we're focusing on capturing our life stories. Everyone has a story to tell, and it's so important that these are documented. We all wish we'd ask more questions about our parents' and grandparents' early lives, especially when they've passed away. It's so hard to piece these stories together after the event. But you can do something about your own history. You can document your own life experiences, firstly for yourselves, and later you could gift them to your children, your grandchildren, and who knows where they'll go with future generations. During this program, you'll get lots of encouragement, ideas and support to get started and maintain momentum on a project of your own. It's not difficult to do. All you need is the willingness to give it a go, a notebook and a pen. Or if you prefer to use a computer, all well and good. It's never too late to capture your life story, your personal experiences, or your family history. You could begin by listing as many memories as you can of your parents, grandparents, and about your own early life. You may like to write about your siblings and your childhood experiences, details about your home, family life, your school, the community in which you lived, and during those years, what were the cultural and social norms of the day? You'll be surprised when you get started just how many memories come flooding back. And in the process of capturing your story, you'll find yourself reliving the joyful moments and you'll gain a perspective on the challenging times that you may have experienced. You'll also gain an appreciation for those special people and the specific events that help to shape who you are. Each week on this program, I'll guide you through the process, and along the way, I'll share examples from my own experience and the experiences of others within our Write Your Story community. You are most welcome to take notes that you can refer to later. In recent episodes, we've focused on a variety of topics for your stories. To recap, we've explored seasonal themes to help you settle into a consistent rhythm of writing. February's episodes centred on summer holidays, the ones we cherished in our younger years, and the ones we presently enjoy. In March, we turned our attention to New Year's resolutions. We revisited some of our goals and reflected on the steps that we took to pursue them. We briefly considered the resolutions we have achieved and the ones that we let go of, and maybe the ones that have reshaped the course of our lives. This topic conjures up so many stories that we can share, from the deeply moving to the laugh out loud ridiculous. In recent weeks, we've reflected on interests, activities and hobbies that have been part of our lives. The ones that once lit us up, the ones that still matter now, and the ones we experimented with before setting them aside. We also dipped into the almost forgotten joy of letter writing as a way to share our stories. Maybe you've even decided to take up the challenge and try writing a short story or a short letter each week, telling your life story to your nearest and dearest. You can do this 1 week at a time. Over 52 weeks, you'd have quite a collection. This week, we're changing direction and exploring memories from our childhood. These memories are the small, bright threads that keep our past stitched together and the experiences that shaped who we are today. Although these may be moments we barely noticed as children, when we take the time to recall these experiences and document the stories associated with them, we often discover that they become the stories we treasure most as adults. Today, it's my pleasure to introduce you to our special guest on the program, Paraparaumu resident Jane DeJoux. Jane, welcome to Coast Access Radio, and thank you for joining us in the studio. I'm really delighted that you came here today.
Thank you, Angela.
Jane, tell us a little bit about the nature of your writing project.
The story I'm reading today is about my grandparents' house. And when I first started thinking about writing my story, it was what popped up, especially my grandmother's pantry.
Oh.
And that was the first piece I wrote. So I've put it together now and I've done a walk through the property and the house.
Yeah.
I'm going to send it to my brother. But I think before I do, I'll ask him to write his memory, because otherwise we'll probably influence each other and he'll remember different things and he'll remember things differently from me. Yeah.
So is he your younger brother?
Yes, by a little bit.
Yeah. Because whether we fall in the family also impacts on how we remember things and the events that took place.
Yes.
So who are you documenting it for in the first?
It's for my daughter and my granddaughter. Oh. My granddaughter in particular is very interested in the olden days.
Oh, yes.
She's very interested in what we wore. Yeah. What I wore as a child.
Yeah. And how old is she?
She's 8.
Oh, yeah. They love stories at 8.
Yes. Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yes.
Because she'd be born in an era where it's all technology and we never had anything like that.
No. No. She finds it really hard to believe some of the things I tell her. Yeah. You know, the telephone in my grandmother's house was a big thing. It was in the hall. It wasn't, you know, in your hand.
Yeah.
And my grandmother had a special chair to sit on when she used the phone, which she really only used for ordering food, I think.
Oh.
Or, you know, it was a business-like tool, I suppose. Yeah, it wasn't for chatting. Because phone calls always cost money, so people are always a little bit cautious about using the phone.
Yeah. Yeah, and would it have been a party line as well?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Mm. But they were around in Dunedin at the time, because I remember once I was visiting, we were visiting somebody in Dunedin where my grandparents lived. Yeah. And for some reason I picked the phone up, I don't know why, and there was a conversation going on and I got severely growled at, but I had no idea that's what it was. It was a party line.
Oh, wow, that wouldn't happen today. We have all those privacy laws. Looking after, Big Brother looking after us there. So how long have you been writing your stories?
Just since your course, Angela.
Oh.
Yeah. I hadn't really started at all. I'd been thinking about it, but the course really motivated me to actually get pen to paper.
Meeting others helps, doesn't it?
It does. And I think in particular when you said do quarter of an hour a day, suddenly it all became manageable. And I have been handwriting, but that isn't really sustainable long term, because it's all gotten a bit of a muddle now and, you know, I missed a page and then I started on that page. And so now I need to up my IT skills, I think, in order to get it all down and not lose it. to keep track of it.
You could tap into Digital for Seniors for that. Yes, they meet on Thursdays. Yeah.
Oh, do they?
Oh, yeah, upstairs in the library, 10 o'clock.
Oh, right. Okay.
Get there early, though. There's always a big queue. Yeah. So so you've written several stories and you're going to talk about your grandparents' house today. That's one story. And you've got a second one that you're going to share with us.
Yes, that's Larnach Castle, a visit we made in the 50s with my family in the 1950s.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I was probably about 10, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, looking forward to hearing it. So you're free to read them when you're ready.
Thanks, okay. Angela. This story is called, I've called it My Grandparents' House. My grandparents lived in a big wooden two-storied house on Napier Street, Dunedin. We travelled to Dunedin from Blenheim by train with my mother until my parents bought a green Morris Minor in the 50s, the kind with orange indicators which stuck out the sides. My father drove after that. He didn't like stopping, so we always arrived in Dunedin late at night. Arriving at Grandma and Granddad's house was always exciting. We would come through the wrought iron gate, great for swinging on, up the 76 shallow asphalt steps, the coal man always complained, to the wide wooden front porch and a generous front door with narrow windows each side. Into the hall, dark stained and huge, a heavy wooden carved hall table, a lamp with a wide, soft, yellow beaded fringed shade casting a soft light, a bowl of French marigolds in a wide, low vase, and a bowl of rose petals, which Grandma would stir as she walked past, a familiar, soft, flowery smell. Also in the hall was the telephone. My grandma sat on a heavily carved black Chinese chair when she used the phone. Besides the stairs, a wind-up gramophone, a portrait of Beethoven. Off the hall on one side was my grandma's bedroom, on the other a formal lounge, only used at Christmas with its stiff, uncomfortable furniture, but with a beautiful bow window. Next to that, the dining room, used at Christmas with its huge table, which could be wound out to 12 feet, a large sideboard with two Grecian-styled lamps. In the corner, a pale oak cupboard with Art Deco-designed stained glass doors, a Romeo and Juliet print and a round frame on the wall. On the way to the kitchen was the morning room, a smaller room with tall north-facing windows reaching almost to the ceiling and right across the width of the room, a light room and cosy. My grandparents spent evenings there. When we stayed, we did too. It was heated with a beige enamelled coal fire with acetate windows in the door. We could see the flame. My grandmother sat in a wide low chair close to the fire with a small low wooden table carved by one of the aunts on one side for a cup of tea and a sewing basket on legs with green fabric lining on the other. On the hearth, a brass coal shuttle, fire irons and very necessary bellows. A built-in cupboard where the hotties were kept near the door. My granddad had a hard seagrass settee in the back corner. If we were too noisy, he rattled the newspaper and cleared his throat, a sign to be quiet. We must have sat on the floor, I can't remember. In the kitchen scullery, my grandma cooked the most delicious food on a green and cream gas stove on legs with a wavy rack above for warming plates. The stove must have been added after the house was built as there was a large coal range in the proper kitchen. The stove was in the scullery, a smaller square room with big windows facing west above the sink and then the back door. Outside the back door were the coal shed and the laundry, a low ceiling room with a small window making it dark, so the door was usually left open. Candle moulds in a dark corner for a dozen long candles, and sometimes oblong shaped wooden boxes of apricots from Central. One time my brother and I ate so many, Grandma had to order more for her jam. The kitchen had a large table under the window The coal range with a loud grandmother clock on the mantelpiece above, a rosewood sideboard and the pantry. The pantry, built off the side of the house, had windows on opposite sides and a safe at the back with ventilation to keep food cool. Painted cream and immaculate, a beautiful, peaceful room. On the shelves, cut glass bowls with rounded lids filled with jewel-coloured jams. Apricot with kernels left in, raspberry and strawberry, always a bit runny. On the floor, stoneware-lidded jars with wide lids for flour and sugar. Upstairs was the big, echoey bathroom, my mother's childhood bedroom with comfy window seats and pretty chintz curtains, a small bedroom and the billiard room. My brother and I slept in the billiard room, a huge, cold room, brown lino on the floor, but with a balcony and a window facing south, down the valley. We saw Aurora Australis from there some nights. The huge billiard table in the centre with wide lights low over it. Around the walls, scoreboards and cues, along with photos of my great-aunts and great-uncles, great-grandparents and my grandfather and his rugby team. The thing we liked most was the secret cupboard, more interesting than anything. It opened when you pressed a panel. It didn't have a door handle. Inside it was dark and musty smelling. My mother and uncle's old toys and games, including my mother's large fabric doll, Heatherbell, dressed in blue velvet, and her teddy bear were kept there. The adults didn't like us exploring in there, but we loved it. The garden. My grandfather was a keen gardener. He had a garden shed 4 to 5 metres long in the huge, sloping, north-facing vegetable garden at the back of the property. He would sit in the shed smoking roll-your-owns. He hardly spoke and was not pleased to see us when we were sent to call him for meals. The shed smelt of earth and sacks. It was dark with 2 small windows and a door which was usually left open. A water barrel collected rainwater from the roof. The vegetable garden had a huge covered strawberry patch. We picked bowls of strawberries or raspberries every day and ate them with icing sugar and cream. I remember sitting on the garden seat, shelling peas in the sun with my grandma. Along the side path leading back to the house were raspberries, gooseberries and black currants. On the other side of the path, a high hedge to shelter the berries in the flower garden. The flower garden had 6 beds, around 2 metres by 4 metres each. This garden was enclosed by high hedges. Dahlias, pansies, roses, chrysanthemums, a riot of colour, flowers for picking. Going towards the house, down the path, steps led down to a generous asphalt courtyard with steep banks on the south and east sides. The east side completely covered in pink ice plant. The front garden was planted with native trees. The house was barely seen from the road. There was potential for a drive on the west side, but that wasn't developed as my grandparents didn't own a car. My grandparents eventually came to Blenheim to live with us, just as I was about to leave for teachers' college. I've visited the house since. It seemed smaller, different, the memories more vivid and evocative than the new reality.
That's amazing. Such clarity with that, the vivid memories there. Did you do that with the visualisation or how did you do that?
The pictures are in my mind.
Yeah,
it took me a wee while to sort it out, and I decided in the end to do a walkthrough pretty much, starting at the gate.
Good for you, It's really, really good story. Mm. And it captures not only your time when you were little in that house, but also your mother's growing up there and her stuff, and also the wider family, like the billiard room, all the stuff, and the secret
cupboard.
It's amazing.
Fabulous
memories. Yeah. So what's your second story?
It's about a visit my family and I took to Larnex Castle out on the peninsula in Dunedin. One year when my father came to Dunedin with us, we went on the Morris Minor to visit Larnex Castle out on the Otago Peninsula. This was around the mid-1950s. The drive was long, very windy, the road close to the sea and unsealed. My brother and I were very excited to be going to a real castle. When we got there, we drove up to the leaf-covered front steps, obviously disused, many broken windows, garden overgrown and neglected, statues in the garden covered in moss and lichen, a feeling of trespassing on someone else's place. My father was off exploring, wanting to see it all, peering through broken windows in the ballroom. My brother, my mother and myself not comfortable with that. We didn't stay long, but I always wanted to go back. I did after the Barkers bought the property. The house still wasn't open to the public, but the gardens were. Later I went back with my daughter and we stayed in the stables. The gardens were a treat, the house a disappointment, the imagination of the interior more intriguing than the reality.
Mm-hmm. So you saw it the before and after, really? Well, not when it's in its heyday, but then, you know, the before it was renovated.
Yes, and, they've done an amazing job. It is beautifully done, yes. Yeah. And the garden in particular, I think it's a garden of national significance.
Is that right?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They've got a lot of quite rare plants there. Yeah. It's a pretty special place.
So when I think about your narrative, I've always been impressed when you've been in the class and then sharing them, you know, with the clarity, the vivid clarity that you have. It really draws, you know, the descriptions you give, it really draws the listeners in. And also will for your readers. Have you shared those ones with your granddaughter?
No, I haven't actually.
Oh, because it'd be quite hard for her to visualise, but because of the detail that you've given, it's quite a different place to the homes that we grow up in today.
Yes. Yeah. I have got a photograph of the house. I think it must have been taken before any other houses were built around.
Oh.
And there's a couple standing on the balcony. Oh. And I'm sort of thinking now it was possibly my grandparents.
When they were younger?
Yes, before they moved in even, maybe. Yeah. So I'll get it out and have another look. But I could show that to her and she'd have some idea.
She'd be thrilled. Mm. And also what they're wearing when she sees what they're wearing.
A big hat. My the woman in it has a huge hat on.
Well, in those days they would have dressed like that to go up, shopping and the gloves and the brooch and everything. So the carefully chosen details, they don't just help us to follow the story. They let us experience it because when you were telling us those descriptions of the room and the big heavy furniture and what was going on in the kitchen and the fruit and what was going on in the garden and also the characters, your granddad, you know, not very sociable, especially with children. Whereas the grandma revelled in it, didn't she?
She did,
It's such a treat to witness storytelling done with this level of attention. And craft, for me it is anyway. And there's so much we can learn from your style, and I certainly have. So really appreciate you coming along and sharing that with us
today. Thank you, Angela.
So approximately how many stories have you written so far?
Probably 10 or 12.
Oh, wow.
Quite a few.
Yeah.
Some of them are short, like Larnex Castle. Yeah. Some of them longer. And they're all over the place. That's why I need to start using the computer I can move them around and put them where I want them to.
Yeah.
And I've got, there was a little bit more on my grandmother's house, but I decided not to put it in for today because it's a different audience, isn't it?
Well, it is a different audience. Yes. Yeah, they're all people like us.
I'm
not sure there'll be many children.
Not family.
Be interesting to get your brother's take on it.
Yes.
Because he'd say, oh, do you remember when?
Yes.
So which one are you working on at the moment? Have you got a particular story in mind? Or?
There was a time when a whole gang of us, kids in the neighbourhood, dug an underground I don't know what you call it really, a house maybe, I can't remember what we called it, under a massive gum tree that was just up the road on a big, probably 4 acres. Yeah. It's all covered in housing now, but all the kids in the neighbourhood emptied out and made that we could stand up in it.
Oh my goodness.
I know. And for some reason, I think the parents didn't know about it. And then suddenly they did, and it was all banned, you know. Oh, we weren't allowed to go there. Well, it probably was quite dangerous.
Yeah.
But it probably occupied us most of one summer holidays.
Yeah.
Buckets of soil. I don't know where we'd put it. And I was quite young. I remember the big boys were in charge.
Yeah.
They probably liked having people who just do the work.
Yeah, organising everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thrill of it.
Yes.
Of having your secret place.
Yes.
And we weren't to tell everybody about it or sell or want to move in.
That's right, a secret. Mm. Yeah. Huge tree, absolutely massive. There were two. I think they must have been planted either side of the original gateway. And then the big house and they're burnt down. But we never found any evidence of the house, so I don't know what had happened there really. But, yeah, there were big gate posts there beside those two big, huge gum trees.
Yeah. Mm. And out playing for hours on end and nobody knew. Because in those days you could.
Yes, well, that's right. Go outside and play.
No worry about stranger danger. Yeah.
No.
Come back before it gets dark.
Yes, exactly. And we did. We just played outside all the time, never thought of going inside and doing things.
Yeah.
And there were lots of kids around.
Yeah.
So, probably, 10 or 12.
Yeah.
It's just a constantly shifting group of kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I really appreciate you sharing this story with us and our community today. And also information about your writing journey, how you're going about it, because that's really interesting as well when people are starting out, and we do appreciate it, and also hope that you'll come back and share some more with us at a later date, because they're really interesting, really colourful, as what else can I say, really vivid details.
Thank you, Angela.
For those of you that are listening at home, it's clear that our memories matter, and these memories from our childhood impact on the choices that we make as we grow up. And they often remain with us throughout our lives if we take the time to dig deep enough. The more time we take to reminisce, recollect and share our memories, the more likely those memories are to stay with us and help us grow. For those of you that didn't have a happy childhood, and that's the case for some of us, we have no control over the family and the environment in which we're born into. But even those stories are worth capturing, because after all, we all have shadows as well as light in our lives. Our story is our story. The hardest part when we begin to document our story is our struggle with self-worth, our chatterbox, which often kicks in saying, "Who am I to be writing this story?" Really, we need to take a leap of faith. And I'm reminded that it was Brené Brown who said, "I now see how owning our story and loving ourselves through the process is the bravest thing that we'll ever do." Capturing our stories, our experience, is a purposeful and rewarding process. And the great thing is, as Jane said, you get to decide what you're going to include in your story and what you're going to keep as a mystery. Sure, you'll make loads of mistakes. I do, every day. But so what? Press on with your writing project. Well, folks, that's all we've got time for today. I hope you've enjoyed listening to snippets from Jane DeJoux's life experience. I hope that Jane's stories have triggered memories of your own. Meanwhile, don't forget to tune in to our Write Your Story programme until this time next week. Jane, once again, thank you so much for coming in today and sharing your stories. Until then, this is Jane DeJoux and Angela Robertson saying, "Ekona mai," and have a great day.
The This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.org.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.